You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
TechFan Podcast number 514. I'm Tim Robertson on an early morning, joined by David Cohen. Hello, David.
Hello.
It's early for me.
It's early here, too.
Well, we...
I've only been up for half an hour.
Well, yeah. This is last night, or today, I guess, or I don't know, whenever it was, we set our clocks back to the actual time, not the fake daylight savings BS. And
thanks to George Bush, ours was back 2 weeks ago, so...
Oh, you put yours too back? You guys are late springing forward and early falling back.
Well, no, I think we're doing it when we always did it. It was George Bush that changed it for you guys.
Yeah, it sucks. I just wish they would just stop. Leave it alone. Nobody enjoys changing the clocks. Nobody. So just stop it at this point. There's no benefit anymore. Anyways.
You know what will happen is if you propose changing it and then a group of keyboard warriors will spring up and start suing the government saying that you can't change it because it's in the Constitution or something.
Yeah, you're right. There's a negative effect when you spring forward. There's more car accidents, there's more deaths. Come on, what are we doing?
I find even now, because it always used to be when you're a kid, you go, oh, when it goes back, there's better you get an extra hour in bed. It's just like, well, as we were talking about, no, you don't, because if you have pets, they don't know.
They
wake up the normal time. Yeah. And then it turns out you wake up the normal time, because as you get older, you don't know either, or your body doesn't.
Well, I wake up every morning at 4:30, because Cole's still in school. He's a junior this year. And he has to take a shower in the morning, and so do I. And he has to be to school at 7 a.m. So if I don't wake up at 4:30, have coffee, take my shower at about 5:15, when I wake them up at 6, that little bastard, well, not little anymore, is as tall as I am, but he'll use all the hot water. So I have to wake up early to get a hot shower. Otherwise, I'll get a cold shower. And my showers are very quick.
So how have you considered showering the night before?
No, I hate that. I like showering in the morning. No. I like showering in the morning, every morning. But I don't need the alarm clock to really wake me up at 4:30 in the morning. I just kind of, my body knows, oh, it's time to wake up. Well, my body doesn't know that we just fell back in time. So today I woke up at 3:30. I stayed in bed, tried to fall back to sleep, but my body was like, well, let's go downstairs. Let's go pee. Yeah, that's always fun. Anyways, it did give me a little bit of extra time to play with my new video game system. So I fell for one of the stupid TikTok videos I kept seeing. It's Anbernic is a company that's been making retro systems for quite a long time. I've got an older, I'm going to say it's 3-inch squared screen Anbernic that looks like, faux wood grain.
Yep.
And it's good for playing Atari games and stuff like that, the older stuff, much older.
Yeah.
But the screen is never very bright, and I kind of lose interest after a little while because it's kind of small. So I kept seeing the Anbernic RG505 popping up, and the screen looked good. It's kind of like a smaller Switch, if you will, Nintendo Switch. So I bought one. I got the turquoise, because it was on sale, cheaper than the rest, and I don't really care about the color. 256 gig version. It was on sale for $150, $140 bucks. But I had a $60 credit on TikTok Shop, which we'll get into in a minute. So I spent less than, the sale price, which was kind of nice. And it actually, number one, it arrived, so that was a benefit. And number two, it arrived really quick. I'm talking like 3 days it was here. I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah.
It runs Android rather than a custom OS like a lot of these. Most of them just boot up into like RetroArch or something like that. And it makes it nice and easy. But this actually boots up into Android. And there's a dedicated button on the side that you click and you go into a RetroArch like, OS, where you can select your games and and it works. I'll be honest with you, it works great. I haven't had any problems with it.
Very cool. So obviously with Android you have to install all the apps. So with this OS you don't need to install apps. It runs all the emulators.
Yep.
All right, so that's the best of all worlds.
Though. Yeah, it's totally illegal and it's already there, so I didn't have to break any rules. But here's one thing. I watch a lot of tech shows on YouTube and I read a lot of articles. And I know that this is out of China. Mm-hmm. It has Wi-Fi capabilities. There's zero chance I'm putting this damn thing on my Wi-Fi network.
Because of the China spying thing?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've watched... do you ever watch Linus Tech Tips?
Yeah.
So they have purchased a lot of these little game consoles and Android TV boxes, and they've run it. You know, they use network and see what's going on, and I would say more than half of them is just capturing your data and sending it to Chinese servers.
Yeah.
And that's very concerning.
Well, yes, it is. I think Mike, the only challenge I would have to that is I don't believe that those Chinese vendors are doing anything different than American or British vendors do with that data, which is they use it for their own internal marketing purposes. I don't think they're giving it to the Chinese government as some sort of
conspiracy. Some of them were, conspiracy have malware to, on it.
Yeah. I think again, some of them get infected by supply chain attacks and that sort of thing. I don't think there's a conspiracy by the Chinese government to use this as
I'm not
some
saying
sort
there is. I'm just saying that I don't want
door.
I don't want
yeah, no,
to
I,
sucking
I
up
understand.
My network data.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a game system. Why do I need to connect it to the internet, period? It's already got all the games on it.
Well, yeah, some people do. Some people want updates. Some people want kind of to connect to these live databases of game posters and things like that. Some people want to run mods, and you get those off the internet. That's why they put the internet in there. But I agree with you. You don't really need to have Wi-Fi connectivity turned on. When we were looking at this before show, I did laugh because the advertising page says it's got 5G.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's no such thing as 5G Wi-Fi. There's 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, but that is not 5G Wi-Fi.
No.
That's something else. And so they are doing the standard thing of... And again, not to accuse a Chinese company of doing this. Everybody does this. The American companies do it as well. Of putting in the thing 5G because they know people think, oh, that's really fast Wi-Fi, when in fact it's 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi is quite old technology now, and there are newer technologies that are better. And they're nothing to do with the bandwidth or the frequency. It's to do with the actual Wi-Fi standard that it supports. But, you know, that's marketing. That's what people do. They lie.
Now, there are things I could upgrade on this. Like, I was a little disappointed it didn't have a lot of the older game systems, like Coleco and Atari, and NES is the farthest it goes back, but there's nothing beyond that. And there are still some older games that I wouldn't mind playing on it. So I could connect it to the internet, download the emulators, and it would work fine.
Mm-hmm.
I've got all the ROMs already, so I just put them on the SD card that comes with it.
Yeah.
I'm seriously considering pulling the SD card and making a copy of it, because usually they use pretty crappy SD cards in these things.
Yeah, I would copy it. I would buy a brand new card and copy it. That's what I always do with these old systems, because you're absolutely right. That thing will fail within 12 months.
Yes.
And then you'll lose everything that's on it. So,
So
spend the $5 on a brand name card and copy everything over.
So I also... Well, let me see if I can... find it. There it is. Is this it? Yes. So I also had bought another system, and this is why I had a credit.
A TikTok credit. I didn't know TikTok even had a shop, so.
If you watch TikTok, that half the things that come up is sponsored videos, and if you click it, it pops right up. Actually, the TikTok shop is not bad. It's, I mean, there's a lot of junk in there. You got to know what you're doing, but I bought some useful things in there.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but I always use PayPal, and here's why.
Right.
So I got this WUDS, an R36S retro game system. Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to what this is, but it's more taller, if you will. And it was $43, so I was like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
So I bought it, and I played two games, and it died.
Right.
And I reported it to TikTok, and they just... did a refund. Boom. No problem. Refunded it immediately.
Didn't have to send it back?
Nope.
No?
Oh, yes. I had to send it back.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, but that's fair.
I didn't care. You know, it's junk. So they gave me a credit. And then, to top it all off with, I kind of had a feeling this was a scam because it didn't go through the TikTok shop. It loaded a website instead. Mm-hmm. And it was a suitcase video game system that you open it up. It has a screen. It has a computer built in it. You screw in the joystick, and it's a video game system.
Right.
I've seen these before, and it looked really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered one. It was not expensive. It was like $20. So I was like, I think this is probably a scam, but I'm using PayPal, so if it's a scam, not a big deal.
Yeah.
And I ordered it, and then it took a month to get here, except it never actually got here.
Right.
It was a complete scam. They kept sending me, they sent me the initial order.
Yeah.
And here's your tracking information. And it took almost 30 days because I know after 30 days, it's harder on PayPal to, you know.
Yeah.
And the day it was delivered, and I used quotes there. Yeah. First thing I did in the morning was I checked the tracking, and it says it was delivered that day. At 1:30 in the afternoon, except when I was checking, it was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, yeah, this was, so I immediately took a screenshot of it, sent that to PayPal along with the dispute, and they immediately refunded my money.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Because they've had hundreds of these.
Yes.
Obviously.
They were like, and my notes were, how did this company know exactly what time in the future this would be delivered?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a feeling it was, and the only reason I ordered it, even though I was 99% convinced it was a scam, not for the 1% that maybe I actually will get this cool thing, because I thought it would be fun to talk about here on the show.
Yeah.
Because we are inundated nowadays, and I don't care what social media platform we're talking about, be it TikTok or X or Facebook or you name it.
Yeah.
There's ads for things that they know you like because they look at your browsing history.
That's worse now. Because now what they do is they put AI pictures of things that don't exist into the advertising that, you know, you think, oh, well, I've not seen that one before. But, of course, it's an AI-generated picture. It's not real.
Yep.
You know, you see them for cars and, well, yeah, particularly for guys like us, all sorts of gadgets and things like that. But I'm not that big a Facebook user, but I see Leanne's Facebook feed all the time over her shoulder. And a lot of times she's going, oh, look at this. She's showing it to me. And I'm going, it's on Facebook. It's probably fake.
Yep.
You know, though she gets a lot of Amazon ads through Facebook now. So those you can check whether they're real or not.
Well, that's one of the things that I was going to suggest. And I'm not saying you can't get scammed on Amazon. You 100% can. But if you see something and it looks like it's a good price, the very first thing I suggest people do is copy the name of the product. And this is assuming that you're using a computer, but you can copy as well on your phone. Go to Amazon, paste in the name of the thing, and see if they sell it.
Yeah.
See what the reviews are. And look at the actual reviews. It's pretty easy to spot BS reviews.
The bot reviews, yeah. Basically, because they're so overly enthusiastic that you think...
I usually look for the negative. I will sort the reviews, but look at the negative first.
Yeah. But
and a lot of the negative ones are, it arrived in an open package, and, you know, okay, well, that shit happens, dude.
That's nothing to do with the actual product.
Exactly.
So your review is not helping. And by the way, it's Amazon. You know you got your money back.
Yes.
The ones that I always suspect are the ones that go, oh, I opened it. It was clearly secondhand, and Amazon wouldn't refund me. And it's just like, well, that's a lie.
Yeah. You're like, nah, that's not what happened.
That's not what happens is you click a button, you send it back to Amazon, and as soon as they see it's in the postal system, they give you your money back.
Yes.
Don't tell us anything different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Yeah, that might change in the future, but that's the way it is right now.
Well, it's because it doesn't actually go to Amazon when you return it.
Yeah.
Nobody on the other end, here's what a lot of people don't realize. Nobody on the other end of Amazon when you do a return is checking your return.
Yeah.
They don't. It goes to a giant warehouse where they get put into bins, and Amazon turns around and sells those bins to
other companies. Yeah, they do some of them. There's in the last few years, certainly in the UK, there has been some scandal stories about the fact that when they get too busy, particularly around Christmas time, what they will do is they will have things like returned laptops and everything, and they put them in a bin, and then they shred them and put them in landfill because it's cheaper for them to do that than to actually do anything else with them. And it's just like...
Now, high-end stuff, Amazon does check some of those things. If you ordered a MacBook Air and you say it's defective and send it back, Amazon will check that one.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you buy a $12 item that's junk and doesn't work. And
you could tell that because every now and again, Amazon will say, oh, don't even bother sending it back. We'll just give you your money.
Yeah, and I've had a couple of those.
Yeah.
They're like, you know what? Just toss that out. Yeah. We don't care.
Yeah. So it's interesting you talk about this this game system because a game system arrived for me this week out of the blue.
What'd you get?
Because I'd forgotten I'd ordered it.
Yeah,
it was a pre-order. And then I'd forgotten it was coming. And then it just arrived out of the blue. So I've put this in the notes. This is from... This is the Atari Edition Hyper Megatech. And what it is... I mentioned a few years ago that there was this company called Evercade that was selling a handheld system that takes cartridges with retro games on it. And I had one of these. I was bought it as a gift. And over the years, I've built up a fair few collections of the cartridges. The cartridges are pretty cool because they're all themed.
Yeah.
So,
and they're licensed, by the way. They're all proper.
Yeah, this is it. They're all properly licensed. They're running in their own emulator. They're not using an open source thing. And it's interesting that because sometimes some of the cartridges go out of license and then become very hard to get hold of. And then there's a little bit of a price increase because you can't get them anymore, which is interesting. So I tend to keep an eye out for the cartridges. The cartridges are quite cheap. They're about, you know, £15 to £17 per cartridge, and they normally have 8 to 10 games on. And if it's a genre you like, the advantage of this system is that it's completely plug and play, just like a Game Boy was. A couple of years ago, they announced that they were going to do these different things that kind of look like a Game Boy called the Hyper Megatech. And it takes exactly the same cartridges as the Evercade, but it's kind of a Game Boy-style system. And they did two. They did a Data East one and a Taito one. And I picked up the Taito one, I think. And it was okay. So it has, you know, 15 embedded games licensed, and then it still supports the cartridges as well. So you kind of get the best of all worlds. Well, they announced... earlier in the year they were going to do an Atari one, and I so much had I forgotten that I'd ordered this, I actually had ordered a second one on Amazon.
This is what happens when you browse the internet at 11:30 at night, David.
And I was pleased that I didn't get the official one, but I actually got the pre-order, because the pre-order one was a limited edition, which actually is in Atari 2600 wood grain effect, which actually is a little bit cooler than the regular one, which is just red plastic. It arrived out of the blue, and it has 50 Atari games on it.
Nice.
A mix of 2600, 5200, 7800, arcade, and even got a couple of Atari Lynx games on there as well. And, of course, as I say, it takes the Evercade cartridges, so it works with all my cartridges as well. And it's really nice. It's one of the nicest systems I've had for a while, purely because the games work really reliably. And it's got nice screen, nice controls in it. I'm really, really pleased with it. It's really kind of cool.
So I got a free game system, and this is a case that you've heard the stories. People like, I think my phone's listening to me. Mm-hmm. We were at Costco, I'm going to say 2 weeks ago, and Costco had the My Arcade Game Station Pro. Now, it looks like a 5200, and it's got the wireless controllers with triggers. And
yeah, I've had my eye on one of those for a while. I really fancy getting one.
And they had it on sale at Costco for $85.
Right.
And I know they're usually $100, but I've seen them cheaper, and I was like, that's kind of cool, but not right now.
Yeah.
And maybe 2 days later, because... and I've discussed this before, I get free stuff on Amazon through Vine. Guess what pops up in Vine?
All right.
And I just looked on the price on Amazon. It's $42.97 right now.
Yeah, that's for a refurbished one, not a new one. But having said that, who cares? Refurbished.
Yeah, who cares?
It's decently refurbished,
What's the difference?
Yeah, the new ones are still $95.
Yeah. Okay, so I got this thing sent to me, and I played it for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was kind of excited about it. I mean, this thing's got Atari 2600, 5200, 5800. It's all Atari-based games, so you're not getting, like, you know, huge libraries on here.
Yeah, but this one of the reasons I like the look of this one is this one will take a card and you can load other games onto it.
Yes, which I haven't done yet, but you can. Mm-hmm. Meh.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is it, the controllers?
The controllers are okay. I mean, compared to a real Atari 2600, it's 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
But the presentation is pretty poor. Mm-hmm. It's kind of annoying, the music that it plays. The selection isn't very good. I would say that there's maybe 10 games that's actually worth playing. The emulation is pretty bad, though. And some of it makes no sense. So it gives you, you know, the knob. So for games like the paddle games, it gives
you... Yeah, it has a little, little rotation thing.
Exactly. One of the games is Tempest, which is exactly what you use for that. Except, no, it doesn't work with that. It works with the actual joystick.
Is that the arcade version of Tempest?
Yes.
Right. Well, that's stupid because obviously the arcade one did support a rotary controller.
Right. But
if it's like 2600, crap. If it's the 2600 version, then you'd understand it because it supported the joystick. But you know what? And this is what annoys me about these types of systems, because like you say, this looks really cool. They've put a lot of effort into the look and the design of this thing.
Yeah. And that's the problem
and they cheap out on the software.
Yeah. I'm really disappointed with the quality of, I don't know what they're using for emulation or graphics, but it looks piss poor.
Yeah.
The games look better on a handheld than they do on this.
Because they probably did exactly what we suspect, which is they got a team and gave them 4 weeks and a pile of money and said, just get it working on this system. And the guys go and load an emulator off the internet and...
Now, you can go in and turn on scan lines and go to 4:3 and all that. But it doesn't help.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And it's... I'll give you Tempest as an example. Number one, it's hard as hell to control with a joystick. It's almost unplayable. Yeah. Granted, Tempest was a vector game, right? Yeah. And that takes an actual vector monitor, not a regular monitor. But I've seen Tempest emulated. I've got a desktop standalone Tempest.
The quarter arcade one.
Yeah. It was a Christmas really present. And it's really good. And it's obviously not a vector monitor in that little thing. But it looks very sharp. The controls work great. It's using the rotary control. The sounds are spot on. I play it every now and then. I really enjoy playing it. It really does feel like I'm playing the actual arcade.
Yeah.
The one on here, the lines are blurry. The controls suck. You can't stop exactly where you expect. It's just a terrible experience. And I thought, you know, if this is the first time anybody played Tempest on this crappy system, they're going to think that's a bad game because they've never played a good emulated with optimized graphics and trying to get to that arcade experience as you can get. It's just really disappointing. I'm going to play with it some more. Like I said, to be fair, I only play it for about 5 minutes, maybe 10. And I was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Sometimes what happens is these systems launch, and then they update the firmware and they get better. But the problem is this one's been out for about 3 years now.
Yes.
So if it's not any good now...
It's not getting any better.
It's not getting any better because you know those people aren't around anymore.
One of the things that I was kind of excited about is, and I haven't done anything with it, is that the joystick itself does have some heft to it. It is Bluetooth. And it has an on and off switch, which is kind of nice. And you could charge it via USB-C. Let me turn it on. And you could turn... I don't know what that does. It's got RGB. It's kind of a cool looking controller. But because it's Bluetooth...
The system looks nice.
Yeah. Because it's Bluetooth, though, I should be able to connect this to my computer or something. And that I'm a little bit more excited about, that I can connect this to something else and play games with it.
Yeah.
You can...
Hmm. Yeah.
Sounds a little cheap, but it's plastic. What do you expect? But I kind of dig the controller and I kind of dig the deck itself. It's got RGB on it as well. But the presentation of games, and that's what it really comes down to. I was having a discussion with a guy at work and they were talking about their high-end PC systems and, you know, I'm getting 8K at 60 frames a second and the amount of money that they put into their graphic cards and all this stuff, right?
Yep.
And but then they start talking about the games and, oh, this game was fun and this game kind of sucks. And I kind of joined in the conversation, even though they're much younger than me and I'm not really a hardcore PC gamer.
Yeah.
And I said to them straight up, you know, because they were like, oh, my system can do this. And I said, yeah, but it's really about the games. What do you mean? I said, I don't care how good it looks. If the game sucks, it's no fun to play, right? They're like, I don't know. I think graphics matter. And I said, well, you know, on my Nintendo Switch, I just got the new Zelda game, and which I talked about on last week's Geeks Pub. And I've been playing through it, and it's very cartoony graphics, but it looks fantastic for what it is. But more importantly, it's super fun to play.
Yeah.
And no, I said, do you guys honestly think you're having any more fun with your high-end PC gaming than I did as a kid on Atari or
PC gamers? They're like guys, these guys still exist.
Hot rod cars.
Guys back in the bus with hot rod cars, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they're
exactly
enjoying
the analogy you're going to use there.
Their enjoyment is the actual hot rodding. The driving and everything, they only like because they've got the bragging rights. Well, they got the bragging rights. They've got the loudest exhaust. They've got the best lights. They've got the, you know, whatever it is they've done to it. It's the bragging rights that they get the kick out of. It's not the actual experience. And in fact, you know, if it takes them 5 minutes to go under the bonnet and hook up the nitrous system or, you know, because they haven't been able to put buttons into the cockpit, or they've got bucket seats that have the racing harnesses, but, you know, make their asses hurt after 5 minutes. They don't care because it's about the look. And with some PC gamers, it's the same thing. It's about, I've got the best, I've spent the most money, I've spent the most time tinkering, and then they do all of that, and then they play games for 5 minutes, and then they start tinkering again. Or when they do play the games, they're looking at frame rates, and they're looking at refresh rates, and they're looking at those little packs of numbers in the corner, rather than actually playing the game, because for them, the tinkering is the fun. And that's fine, there's nothing wrong with that, but the problem is those guys like to think that they are the best gamers, and a lot of them are not.
No.
You know, I was thinking this last... I was playing Doom Eternal last night on my Nintendo Switch, right? And the reason I play on there, even though I have better handheld PC systems, is because the battery lasts longer on the Switch. And you know what? It really looks good enough on the Switch. And actually, you know, it's a very good example. It's one of those games... I loved the 2016 Doom reboot they did. I don't like Doom Eternal as much. It has all these platforming sections in it. To get to the next level, or to get to finish a level, you have to do a jump and you grab a bar and then press two buttons and a boost to land on this platform. And if you don't get it right, you die. And you do this over and over again. And I find myself doing this thinking, dude, I want to shoot demons. I don't want to be doing precise jumps like I'm Lara Flipping Croft in a Doom game.
Yeah.
They lost, you know, and it's one of the reasons why I've never played it on a better system where it would presumably look better and have better frame rates, is because the gameplay would still be kind of a sucky. And I'm at the position now, I just want to grind through it so I can say I've finished it and then never look at it again. So I'm fine to play it on the Switch. But, you know, this is a thing where the gameplay is nowhere near as good as it could be because they've decided to introduce elements that just aren't fun.
Well, we talked about this on the last Geeks Pub. It's the game, stupid. And Nintendo knows that. That's why their system sells as well as it does. That's why their games are some of the best games ever made.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do platforming, it's got to be side-by-side platforming. Platforming in 3D is always awful.
Because Sonic, there's a couple Sonic games that did it pretty well. I would disagree with you. If it's done right, like there was a Pac-Man game that was very much platforming. I don't remember what it was called. Maybe Pac-Man World or something.
Yeah, but was it first person?
No.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's first person.
The only time first person would work is if it's it's a VR game.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But this is a first person shooter, that has sections where there are no aliens, no demons, nothing to shoot. You just have to do platforming.
Yeah, that's not good.
And it's just stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to play that Pac-Man game. That was a really fun game. I think it was on the GameCube. That's how long ago that was.
Yeah.
Apple, to segue out of video game systems here.
Yeah.
Apple had a bevy of releases and announcements this week. Mm. New MacBook Pro, M4 chips. Everything is M4 chips. New MacBook Air. New iMacs in different colors, a new finally USB-C charging on the mouse, which of course is still underneath it, which is stupid. But the one that really kind of like, hey, that's, is a new Mac Mini, which looks like a Mac Studio and an Apple TV had a baby.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's four by four.
It's a little bit bigger than the Apple TV. Before it came out, everyone was saying it was going to be the same size as the Apple TV. It's a little bit bigger than that, but it's pretty small.
It is pretty small. And it starts at $799, I think?
In the UK, it starts at £599. I don't know what the US price is.
Yeah, I'm
looking. It starts pretty low. And, you know, I have to say, it's a pretty good value system for the entry level.
From $599. Yeah. And it's pre-order available 11/8. So as we record this, we're 5 days out from them starting to ship this.
Two USB ports on the front.
Yep.
And
three Thunderbolts on the back.
And this is Thunderbolt 5. Yep. This is the latest one. Built-in power supply, so you don't have a brick on the outside.
Yep.
I have to say, this is, you know,
intriguing to me.
Yeah, the Mac Mini over the years has been abused and ignored by Apple, and certainly the last couple of updates were quite expensive for what you were getting. But now this has got the latest chip in, thanks to the incoming arrival of Apple Intelligence.
Ethernet 2, by the way.
Yeah, but all the machines now come with 16 gig of RAM, which is a fairly big upgrade for Apple, because traditionally they've only given you 8 gigs of RAM to start. This entry level machine is a pretty powerful computer for what you're paying. It's pretty good.
I immediately saw this and started thinking about, this is a perfect machine for people who are doing modding, because it's so small. It's the Mac OS. It doesn't have the great big brick, like you said.
Yep.
Imagine taking one of these and simply buying an old G4 iMac, you know, with the built-in screen, replacing the screen, making it, you know, still accurate, though, pulling all the guts out of the G4 and sticking this in there. That would be pretty freaking awesome.
It would be awesome, yeah, absolutely.
And you wouldn't have to, like, people have done that with the previous Mac Mini, but they have to 3D print all these things to make it fit. With this, you just stick it in there.
Small enough, yeah.
Who cares? But, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw this, though, is I'm not really happy with my mini PC acting as a Plex server.
Yeah.
It's kind of a power hog, even though it's a small PC. For no reason at all, the fans will just kick on. When nothing's happening, the fans will just kick on and it gets quite loud.
Yeah.
And I really haven't liked it very much, to be honest. And I've been thinking about replacing it with something a little bit more reliable. I bet this thing is silent. It's small. Yeah. For $599, that's nothing. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to my Plex server, I've had nothing but problems with the mini PC for no reason, just stop serving.
Yeah.
And I would have to reboot the PC, relaunch the server. When I was running the Plex server on my Mac, I never had any problems. It just worked.
It's running Windows.
Yes.
Yeah. So the problem, because I had a PC doing this, and the problem is what happens is that in the background, Windows will install an update and then it'll want to reboot. And, eventually, because obviously the machine is sat there headless, it decides, oh, there's nothing going on here, I'm going to reboot. And then it reboots, and then all the services stop. And until you log onto it again, it doesn't work. And exactly. I had that a lot with mine, and eventually I thought, screw this, and I stuck all my video onto a USB drive that I plugged directly into my router, and now I just serve it straight off there. And it means I don't have a server doing anything, so sometimes that's a pain in the neck, but I also don't, I can always get to my video when I want to, whereas with the other machine, I couldn't.
Well, here's the benefit for me. The only thing I have to plug into this Mac Mini for it to be, initially I have to have a wired mouse and keyboard, but beyond that, I just let it sit there because with my MX keyboard and mouse, it supports up to three different USB devices. Now, one of them is set for that mini PC, which I can replace. One of them set for my Mac Studio, one of them set for my gaming PC behind my monitor, right? Mm-hmm. So all I would have to do is plug it in, plug in a mouse and a keyboard, which I keep a wired mouse and keyboard for when I get a new computer and I have to physically plug in to do something. set my Logitech up so it recognizes it, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's not true. Then I have to plug in my two external 5 terabyte drives to it.
Yeah.
Download, and I got to plug in HDMI, at least initially, to my monitor or my TV, so I can log in and do stuff. So I guess I do have to have a few things plugged in. But even still.
Once it's set up, you can just connect to it with your Mac.
Yes, exactly. You
wouldn't need to have anything plugged into it.
So, yes.
Yeah.
But once it's set up.
Yeah.
Now, I'm trying to remember. I know if I have a Mac drive and I plug it into PC, the PC will not see it. It has to be reformatted.
Yeah.
But these are PC drives, which I think if I plug into my Mac, it will see it right away.
I think nowadays it should understand that.
I think the Mac will see them. Because what I don't want to do is reformat one of the drives, copy from the PC over to it, and then reformat the other one for backup. That's why there's two 5 terabyte drives, because one's just a clone of the other one. So you
might need to run a piece of software to actually, depending on what you wanted. If you need to read the drives, I'm pretty sure that the Mac can read it directly. If you need to write to the drives, you might need an NTFS driver to actually be.
Because it's such a pain with the mini PC, and how. I've got a shortcut that sits on my desktop, so when I want to mount one of those drives, I just click it and it mounts, and I can drag my files over. It'd be easier on the Mac, though, because it would look at Bonjour and boom, there it is.
Yeah.
Or hell, for that matter, AirDrop. I could AirDrop files to it.
Yeah.
So I'm seriously thinking about getting one. Not right now, but because I haven't had my Plex server running in a while now. And I kind of miss not being able to watch the old videos that are on there. I've got a ton of movies and stuff. I don't ever watch that. But all the family videos are on there and stuff. And those are the things I kind of want to get access back to. And I've neglected it for a long time. But it's just simply because it's such a pain in the butt on that mini PC. I thought the mini PC would be perfect for that. But friggin' Windows keeps ramping up the fans for no reason. Like you said, doing an update and then rebooting. And then... oh, look, it's not serving again. But it will just stop serving for no reason. It's just sitting there. There's no updates. There's no nothing. It just stops serving.
Just crashes.
So I'm thinking about doing this. I don't know yet.
See, for that, I wonder whether you might be better served by actually picking up an M1 Mac Mini, like a renewed one.
It's the size that's really drawing me to this, though. It's so small.
Yeah.
And desktop space, let's be honest, I don't care who you are, is limited to a certain extent. And with this, I could literally put this thing sitting on top of my gaming PC behind my monitor with the two hard drives just sitting over there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need any more space. Whereas the Mac Mini, the M1, man, of course, if I can get an M1 for like $300, maybe that would be a better choice.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. Because if it's going back up in the back of a computer anyway, on top of a computer, it doesn't really matter how big it is.
Let's see how much a M1 Mac Mini is going for on eBay right now. So Mac Mini. So $369, $539, $629. So they're still expensive.
Yeah, it's definitely not worth spending anything near what the new one is, but
I mean $299 isn't bad for a Mac Mini.
Yeah.
But for a couple $100 more I could get a brand new one.
With a much longer support and warranty and all of that good stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Plus, you know, I'm pretty confident on the stability. And look, it's an M4, so for what I'm doing with it, it's almost overkill.
Oh, I would say probably definitely overkill.
Yeah, and it's probably more powerful than my M2 Mac Studio.
Probably.
Yeah. But, I don't know. We'll see. Christmas is coming up, and I got a lot of presents to buy. So Apple did have... I like that they didn't have a stupid pre-recorded event again. I'm so those are so boring.
Yeah, no, I agree. They're almost like
rote
spoofs. Yeah, they're like spoofs of themselves now.
They are,
because you know exactly what you're going to see with a zoomy around camera, and here's here's Jaws to talk about this, you know, and then he's in some stupid location with backdrop graphics and all of that. It's just, yeah, they need to, I think they should go back to doing live stuff, but they probably won't.
Yeah, they've gone cheap on it. But here's the thing. I think it probably costs more to do all these pre-recorded segments than just having an event on a stage in front of people.
You know what? I think the reason they love it is because it allows them to completely and utterly tailor the message.
Yeah. You can't have any goofs. I mean,
well, here's the weird thing. They have had goofs. There was that big fuss when they did the when they crushed all those computers for the iPad.
Technical goofs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, that's what they like. They're control freaks. They want to have something that's incredibly slick. But, you know, I think they lack a bit of soul now.
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, they're very soulless. They're just boring, definitely glossy crap.
Yeah. But definitely for this set of products, which basically in the main was a processor bump, it wasn't worth having an event for. So I think they did the right thing by they kind of did a thing of it. They kind of leaked beforehand. There's going to be a week of Mac, and then they released one every couple of days with the press release and everything. So they had a whole week of coverage. In that respect, it was quite good. But ultimately, you know, I think the big thing here is, just like all things in computing, is that, you know, you wait a while and then you get something that's vastly superior to the stuff that came before.
Yeah.
And really, you know, they're hitting this point now where a lot of people who had M1 machines might be thinking, oh, you know, maybe it's getting a bit long in the tooth. I should perhaps update it. And if you're going to update from an M1 to an M4, that's a hell of an upgrade.
Depending on what you're doing with it, but yeah.
Yeah, I think for anybody, to be honest, even an M1 MacBook Air is, I don't think they put the MacBook Air on M4. I think it's still on M3. They gave it more RAM.
Well, let me look.
For the same money because of Apple Intelligence. So, so that's like a $200 saving right there, because that's what
they charged. Yeah, they didn't update the upgrade. Well, no, yeah, they did. Increase the base RAM, but they made them to
16 gig.
Yeah. I've got an M1 MacBook Air that I use at work every day.
Yep.
It's simply docked and it's connected to a big monitor. It's still extremely fast. For everything I do at work, I don't need to. Until it actually breaks or something,
exactly.
It's fine.
I've the same. I've got one as well. In fact, I think I've bought three of the damn things over the years, because what happens is I bought the original one, and then after a while I thought, I'm not reusing it enough, so I sold it. And then I think I bought another one and then sold it again, and now I have another one. And I do use it a little bit. The problem is I have to spend a lot of time in Windows nowadays.
Well, let's switch gears here on Windows.
Yeah.
You were, for many years, you'd go to VMworld, for instance, San Francisco.
I did, yeah. And I stopped going a couple of years ago. And this story is one of the reasons why.
So Broadcom bought VMware, a couple of years ago now?
I said about 3 years ago now.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were concerned. For good reason. And here's a story on Ars Technica on Halloween. 300% price hikes push disgruntled VMware customers towards Broadcom's rivals. Yep. Could this be any worse for Broadcom? How stupid do you have to be? They got rid of perpetual licenses. They're bundling stuff now. So even if you don't need half the stuff in the bundle, nope, that's the way you have to take it.
So you're paying for
stuff you don't even need.
They've basically done an Adobe, right? Adobe was the same, only on a much smaller scale, because this is enterprise software where we're talking about big money.
But nobody bought Adobe and did this. They spent $69 billion to buy VMware.
Yeah, they've done this before. They bought Symantec a while back, they bought another big enterprise company, and they did exactly the same thing with them. They basically bank on the fact that the majority of the customers of these big software, the cost to change is so expensive that they think they can get away with ramping the prices up. And what they've done is, VMware had a very, very complicated licensing and pricing structure, because basically you could buy a product to do any specific thing you want. So what people would do is they would buy just the bits and pieces of VMware they needed for their particular applications. And we're not talking about guys running it on their desktop here. We're talking about people running data centers.
Yes.
Enterprise data center software. And VMware is not just virtual machines. They have a virtual storage stack. They have a virtual networking stack. So basically, you can virtualize an entire data center in VMware. It's very, very flexible. And then they have all the support applications and management applications and network protection applications you need. And that's one of the reasons I used to go to these shows, because you could get an overview of the entire data center industry in one show, because they did everything. And then what happened is Broadcom came along and they basically eliminated most of those perpetual SKUs. And what they did is they replaced them with a set of three or four single bundles. And those bundles, the reason I use the Adobe comparison, it's like Adobe Creative Cloud. It's everything. But you've got to pay the license fee for everything every year. And yeah, it, for some people in particular, it's like an equivalent of a 300% price increase. And people are going, we can't afford it. The difficulty for Broadcom now is the timing is terrible, because a lot of people can't afford this right now. Inflation is up, loan costs are up, operating costs are up, staff, everything's up post-COVID. And people are saying, we can't swallow this sort of price increase. And so they're saying, is it cheaper in the long term? Because Broadcom are not backing down. So is it cheaper in the long term to actually take the pain of switching off VMware now to a different product? Or a group of different products, because that's what it will have to be. You won't be able to find one solution that does this. And Broadcom are basically saying, oh, well, the cost of change and everything is going to be too much. So people, they'll bitch and moan about it, but they'll end up paying.
VMware customers that I spoke with from the article said their VM costs rose 300% after Broadcom's takeover. Some companies have cited even higher price hikes, including AT&T, which claimed Broadcom proposed a 1,050% price hike. Well, AT&T is suing Broadcom.
That's
over
because
perpetual license support, and says it has looked into VMware alternatives. Yeah. IT supporter Encore Technology is currently migrating, they've already said, from VMware to OpenNebula, which doesn't do everything VMware does,
but it's
probably, for what they're using it for, more than adequate. Now, is there pain in switching a system like VMware? Absolutely. It's a massive undertaking.
That's often an 18-month to two-year project. Yeah. If you start now, and you're going to need to pay a lot of consultancy and support and engineering costs to do that, as well as the cost of whatever the new infrastructure is, plus there will be a period of time when you're running both. And we've yet to see whether Broadcom starts putting exit fees in, where they're saying, oh, if you want the data out of VMware, you'll have to pay a license fee as well, which could happen to try and discourage people from doing this. But I think the other thing is there's actually one of these cyclical trends going on in data centers at the moment. Everyone went virtualized, and now people are starting to move back to physical hardware.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Because at this point, the physical hardware costs and the performance that you get, it's compared to a 300% price hike for virtualization. VMware Enterprise Edition costs Illinois Lakeland College rose 300% with no additional features of benefit. And the technical service director said, since we are a community college, we are responsible to taxpayers to be good stewards of our funds and invest in technology. When there's a significant price increase, such as a 300%, it becomes an issue that requires us, that's a big word right there, to weigh the costs against gains and seek alternative options. I think that this could not have come at a worse time for VMware when, at least in the United States, inflation has started to deflate quite a bit. I don't know about the rest of the world. I don't follow everybody's economy. I know it's still really high in the UK.
Yeah, but the thing about inflation, though, is that you're right. Inflation has slowed down, but the prices that have gone up under inflation don't come down, because that would be
that would be
proper deflation. But you don't get a lot of that,
and certainly
in the tech industry, you don't. So the prices have gone up, and they're going to stay where they are.
I get that Broadcom has to recoup the $69 billion.
Yeah,
I get that, but that's really about the taxpayers. And I can guarantee you, people that work at Broadcom didn't see a pay increase, except for maybe the CEO, but the executive team as a whole. But they needed a second boat, David. I mean, let's be honest. I get that they have to increase prices somewhat, but 300 or in AT&T's cost 1,000%.
No, this is
there's no justification but
greed.
This is
monopoly marketing because they're basically VMware is effectively they're saying, well, it's like a monopoly because who's going to move away? It's so difficult. Yep. And then they're saying, well, so you either pay it or you lose access to your software tomorrow. That's one of the reasons that AT&T are suing, because AT&T had contracts in place that basically gave them either 3 or 5 year perpetual licenses, and they were only on year two. And Broadcom said, yeah, we've just ripped those up. You've got to pay the subscription licensing now. And AT&T said, no, we had a contract.
Yep.
And Broadcom went, yeah, no, you didn't. And that's why they're suing, because they're basically saying they really feel that they've been strong-armed by Broadcom. And you know the way this is going to go is that VMware revenue will decrease. It's going to destroy a lot of their market, and certainly it's going to destroy any growth in the VMware market. And in 3-4 years' time, Broadcom will offload it to somebody else.
Yep.
And then the person will have to pick up, whoever buys it will have to pick up the pieces and try and rebuild what was one of the market leaders in the
not just rebuild the market cap and market share, but also the goodwill that the brand is completely destroying right now. Let's move on a little bit here. We're getting close to the end of the show, and there's a couple other things I did want to talk about. This is interesting in The Verge again. Nile Patel, who, by the way, his Decoder show is actually pretty good. I've listened to it a few times. Did an interview with the head honcho over at TurboTax, right?
Yeah, Intuit.
Intuit. Yeah. And afterwards, their PR person basically asked him to take stuff out of the interview, that it was unethical. Yeah. And
This was because he asked some... a couple of unsurprising questions about Intuit.
I don't know why this would be unsurprising. Unsurprising. Yes, 100%.
They basically asked them why Intuit had lobbied Congress to try and stop people getting access to free tax software from the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Because that's something that the U.S. government does.
It goes beyond that, because really what a big tax filing company is only there because the tax codes in the U.S. are so obtuse and difficult that you have to have somebody else doing your taxes, right? Even if you don't make a lot of money, it's way easier to use software to do your taxes. Yeah, now, here's the thing. The government knows what you owe them. Why can't they just send you a bill? They know what they took that was more than they should have. They could just send you there's really no reason for us to do taxes every year. The government knows, right? They have software. They know.
The point about the tax system, and it's the same here in the UK with self-filing, is you do want to do your own calculations to make sure that they match up with what the government says, because the governments are not infallible.
No.
But the thing is, the actual filing of a return, is historically in the US has been something that was much easier if you use software like TurboTax.
Absolutely.
Right? And consequently, those manufacturers, those companies have fought tooth and nail with Congress to prevent the federal government from producing something internal that makes filing your taxes simpler. Right? They've resisted having the federal government provide any sort of software. Yeah, they've resisted web filing, they've resisted everything because they want to protect their market. And this is what Nile Patel was asking them about, because they have a lobbying firm who works very hard on this. Effectively, the CEO of Intuit said, well, look, she basically said, well, look, this is our business. Why would we not do things that are on their business interests? And then the PR person afterwards realized that actually that didn't look, even though she gave what was effectively an honest answer, the PR person thought, well, first of all, that might upset our lobbyists because it makes their job harder, and secondly, it's probably not in their interest to have that in an interview. And they tried to have it removed.
They said it was inappropriate, egregious, and disappointing.
And of course, Nile Patel turned around and said, you know what, dude? Yeah, you don't get to tell us what questions we ask.
Yep.
It was on the record. We had a fair answer. Go screw yourself.
Yeah.
Have you heard of journalistic ethics? Because we're not doing puff pieces for Intuit here.
I've been. Yeah. See, this really hit a nerve for me, if you will. Or maybe I should say a note, not so much a nerve. And that's because I've been in this exact situation. And I think I've talked about this on Tech Fan and back in the day in the MyMac podcast, that I used to do a lot of product reviews. Companies would send me products all the time. At one point, HP had sent a camera, and it was a relatively cheap, inexpensive camera. Now, when you think of HP, at least back in the day, you thought of really good engineering, good product. Yeah. I was expecting to really like this, and this was an inexpensive camera. HP's name on it, it's probably going to be pretty good. And I was nothing but disappointed. It was really bad. And I wrote a very negative review. And HP, not some PR company, HP directly reached out to me, very angry, wanting me to delete this review, take it down. And I told them no. And I told them why. Yeah. Number one, ethics. Number two, you don't get to tell me what to do. You don't get to influence my decision on a product. And number three, this is a piece of crap. And I'm very disappointed that you guys would release this. I suspect that it's an HP badging over some cheap Chinese or at the time Taiwan product. Well, they backed off, and they actually had an engineer from their camera division contact me directly. Mm-hmm. And he admitted that it is exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah.
And they were so disappointed, not in my review. Now, this wasn't the PR people, so they were...
Yeah.
He told me that they actually printed my review and hung it up. They wanted their engineers to see what happens when they used, you know, they just brand something. And they sent me something that they designed, which was a much more expensive camera, and was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was great. But that stuck with me all these years. And I've had other companies reach out when I did a negative review wanting me to change it, or... hey, could we, you know, maybe send you another product, or hey, there's going to be an update. Could you pull your review into the update? No. I've had companies try to influence my reviews in the past, or my opinions,
and I've never changed any of them. Yeah. But what's disappointing about this is first of all, that they tried this in the first place. Yeah. But secondly, is they don't appear to want it. I mean, this happens all the time now, where a company screws something up, and then by... trying to strong arm somebody, they make the story bigger than it even
and
was.
And that's the thing. If anybody who listened to this review, let's say a million people listened to the review. It's not, but let's just pretend. I listened to it. I didn't just read the transcript. I actually listened to that portion of the interview. And there's nothing in there that would, if I was a shareholder, I would think, oh, I don't like that. Hey, boy, he comes across pretty bad there. He sounds greedy. No, none of that was there. It was a very... I thought the guy gave him somewhat of an honest answer. I mean, he kind of tried to deflect it some, and, whoa, what do you mean? And he tried to make it sound like they weren't doing, you know, $500 million worth of lobbying to keep the tax code as complex and obtuse as they possibly can, so we have to rely on their products.
Yeah.
But there was nothing in there that I thought was objectionable, period, at all.
Yeah.
But because they did this, and they tried to strong arm him, they made that portion of the interview 1,000 times more popular and more relevant and than it ever was.
Not
would
only
have been.
That, by trying to cover it up, it makes the comments that were made sound more sinister. It makes it sound like, you know, we're doing something we know people don't like. We think people might criticize us for, so we don't want you to mention it. Is a worse, far worse story than
and how
do
often
something,
does that
we're
happen?
Doing something
a
yeah
lot.
We're doing something people might like, won't like, but you know what? It's our business. What are you going to do?
Yeah, right? This you could not. Whoever their PR person is should lose his job for this, because holy crap, could you have made a nothing story worse? I don't think you could have. This is just how could you be that dumb? Really?
Yeah.
Last thing we're going to talk about. There was this thing that happened a couple years ago where there was a Twitter account that was tracking Elon Musk's jet.
Mm-hmm.
And Elon Musk threatened to sue him. But of course, this is public information and he didn't have any standing. But the moment that Elon Musk bought Twitter, that was one of the very first things he did, is he shut this guy down. Now, Meta has now suspended several Threads and Instagram accounts that track the private jets of celebrities such as Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Kim Kardashian, and the former President Trump.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
There's another one.
Yeah. So I'm of two minds here. Number one, it is public information. Number two, it's really freaking creepy and potentially dangerous to be tracking this and publishing it. Mm-hmm. I don't see the benefit to us of having somebody tracking someone's private jet like this and posting, Elon Musk just landed here. Well, all you need is nut jobs going, oh, now I know where to attack.
There are two benefits to it, right? Well, three benefits. First of all, we live in a celebrity-obsessed culture, and so you will get people who idolize the celebrity concerned, who get a kick out of knowing where they are. And those people will come to these threads or whatever and follow them, and then will they be monetized by the platform? And so everybody wins. The second thing is that there are people who have a professional interest in knowing where Trump or Taylor Swift is, and that's news sites and bloggers and photographers. And they use it as a business tool, because they can line up photographers to be in this place and maybe catch a picture of one of these celebrities in their back of their limousine, and then they could say, oh, here's Kim Kardashian turning up at Detroit, and maybe she's doing this, maybe she's doing that, and that also is monetizable. So those people have an interest. And then the third thing is, up until recently, the platforms these things were hosted on appreciated the traffic as well. Now they've changed my mind. What bothers me about this is, as you say, the information is publicly available. These guys, they go out, they pull data from various CAA and other websites to actually identify where these vehicles are, right? And then they post them. They're all going on, oh, it's so unfair that Zuckerberg's stopping me from tracking his plane on Threads and that sort of thing. And it's just like, I said this online to a couple of people. I said, if only we had a technology where, I don't know, maybe you could create some sort of, what would be the word be?
Website?
Maybe like a site that people could go to where you could publish whatever information you wanted, and the only person you were accountable to was yourself. Rather than using a platform that's run and hosted by these multi-billionaires who may suddenly decide they have no interest in you knowing where their personal plane is. And this is what annoys me about today's culture, is that people will go, oh, I posted it on Meta, I posted it on Threads, I posted it on X, or Zitter, or Twitter, or whatever, and now they've shut my account down. It's just like, so go and do it yourself. Don't use somebody else's stupid platform where, frankly, under the First Amendment, they have a right to shut you down. They don't have to host you if they don't disagree. If you can argue whether they should agree with it or not, but the point is, you don't have an objective right to be hosted on their platform.
No.
If you're posting information they've decided they don't like, just in the same way that they can decide they either do like or they don't like Nazis or racism or misogyny or all the other things that we see on social media. Some of them have different views on that, and some of them have views that change from time to time. That is the risk you take when you're posting on their platform. Don't build your business relying on somebody else's platform when you're also relying on the largesse of the person who runs the platform.
And that's why I don't feel sorry for when Apple was stopping ads and stuff. It's like, well, you were building your platform, your business on somebody else's stuff. When they decided they didn't want you to do that anymore, you're screaming foul. Well, I'm sorry, build your own iOS. Exactly. Get millions and billions of people to use that product, and then you could do whatever the hell you want with it. But until you do, you have no inherent right. That drives me crazy.
So the guys who do this stuff, I would say, go and get a website, account, go and build your own website that presents this stuff, and then nobody can stop you.
Yep.
And
except for maybe the hosting company, but
Well, yeah, but they won't, will they? Because hosting companies don't really do that. They don't really care. Right?
No.
And so you can build it, and then you can monetize it yourself, and you get to keep all the profits. And hey, it's a lot more work, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, like it was a lot of work to build Twitter in the first place, or Facebook.
Exactly.
I think we're exactly lockstep on that one. So with that, we're going to wrap up this episode of Tech Fan. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We'd love it if you sent some feedback. It's theshow@techfanpodcast.com. You can also go to our website, techfanpodcast.com. mymac.com or mymac.com.
What I'd like you to do is to adjust our website, Tim, so that it has an updated location to where your and my personal jet is at all times.
You know what I found out on my phone?
You've got a personal jet?
No, but for whatever reason, I think I turned it off, but maybe I didn't. I was sharing my location with you for like the last 2 years. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, I went into location managers or something on my phone, and I was sharing it with Julie, which is fine. That's my wife. Yeah. But I was also sharing it with you. Yeah. I'm like, where the hell was I sharing my location with David Cohen?
Maybe you did it one time when I was over for one of the Mac conferences.
It's the only thing I could think of.
I forgot to turn it off, but I mean, it is a bit weird. I mean, I was sat in the car with my wife the other day because I've been off work this week because my eye. And we were waiting for my daughter to come out from school, and my wife turned on her phone and watched her walk up the street on the map. And, you know, you could obviously that is a legitimate use, and she's a child and all of that sort of thing, but it's still kind of creepy, you know. And then Leanne said to me, she said, well, for some reason, I can't see you on here. And I thought, okay.
Is that a good or a bad thing? Location is turned on, and I'm sharing it with... actually, it says two people because Julie's on my account, which I have to change, by the way. But you were listed there, which I turned off.
I normally have a general idea of where you are. Within a thousand miles or so.
Yes.
For me, that's good enough.
Most of the time, you can narrow that down to about 150 miles and you'll still be close.
Yeah.
I just thought that was weird. Anyways, that's the end of this episode. We'll see you guys in probably about 2 weeks. Make sure you're checking out the Geeks Pub. And David, I'll see you next week.
See you then.